Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks so much for listening to Connecting Faith. Programs like this are possible thanks to listeners like you. You can find out more about supporting Faith Radio on our website, faithradionet.com.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hi, thanks for tuning in. Glad to have you listening to Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Stavem, and today we're looking forward to spending a little time talking about social media. We'll also talk about teens, maybe a little bit about brain development, you know, any number of things. There's a lot of topics that we're going to cover today, and we're happy to have in studio today Pam Stenzel. We visited with Pam several times. She's founder of Enlightened Communications, tackles today's tough issues of sex with candor and humor and insight, challenging young people to get the abstinence advantage, and has traveled around the globe and still does a lot of traveling, speaking to thousands of young people. And of course, you've probably seen some of her her video work, updated the classic, I guess we could call it, Sex Has a Price Tag, been updated, now called The High Cost of Free Love, and a number of others. And we've got a couple of books that we're going to reference today. Nobody Told Me. It's written by Pam, maybe a year ago or so, maybe that, or a couple years ago. And then also the latest is called Who's in Your Social Network? And that's the one we're going to reference most of our time today. But good to see you, Pam. Thanks for coming in.
Great to be with you. Good to be right here at KTIS today. That's awesome.
We are excited about that. We were just talking before the program. We, you know, we around the network, our listeners at Faith 1200 in the Red River Valley, you'll be heading to Fargo here in a month or so?
I'm going to do a little...
Dakota, I guess.
Yeah, I'm doing a little tour of North Dakota, Devil's Lake and Park Rapids and Minot. Some other cities are all around there. So first week of October. And you can, if you go to pamstenzel.com, you can always click on Where in the World is Pam, and you can actually see my schedule.
Is that kind of like a Where's Waldo sort of thing? So it's just kind
it feels like that to me.
Yeah. I believe it does. So, well, you've been traveling, speaking on these topics for a long time. I'd be interested, I guess, how... Has the message changed for you in terms of, I mean, you're still talking about abstinence, but obviously social networking has become another part of that. So has the message significantly changed for you? So.
Yeah, I mean, some of it will remain the same, and some of it obviously changes. The medical information, I think, is the toughest to really keep up to the times with, and making sure that you're accurate and that you get vaccines and then they've got to be introduced into your talk. And so there's a constant change of medical. And I laugh because some people, especially in this Midwest area where I kind of lived and grew up near Sioux Falls as well as here in the Minneapolis area, who've known me a long time, some of them are still using a DVD, or actually it would have been VHS that I did in the early 90s. And they're like, but we like that one. I'm like, but you don't understand that. I tell kids on my very first talk that came out that we filmed here in the Minneapolis area that they should take a quarter on their date. So if their date's pressuring them to do something, that they should say, here's a quarter, go call my dad, you know, find a payphone. If you say that to kids today, can you imagine? Like, they're like, what buggy did you ride up in? What is a quarter going to do? And how am I going to use a phone with a quarter?
Where can they even find a phone?
Exactly, right. So you must update your material.
Okay.
Just letting youth pastors know. Don't take the one off the shelf that was done in 93. Yeah. Get the new one.
Okay. Pam Stenzel is with us today. So the issues are... have increased. And let's talk a little bit about just the social networking. And, you know, one of the questions I wanted to talk about was, do we really understand, even us as adults, the kind of influence that we have in terms of media? It's TV, videos, internet, whatever it is. I mean, you know, how do we even have discernment? We're really saturated by all this.
Right. I think it's the sheer volume that is probably most difficult. And our teenagers have grown up. A lot of them now have grown up with quite a bit of technology. So it's changing all the time, but they've grown up knowing that technology is where they get their information. You know, 20 years ago, we were pretty limited in the technology that gave us our information. We didn't have Twitter. We didn't have these things. And so for all of us, this technology has expounded our ability to receive messages. And then we have to be discerning about, am I going to get my message off the television, the nightly news, Twitter, the blog sites? I mean, it, you know, if a mom and dad are listening and you think about the way you've changed, I mean, I used to cook with a book in front of me. Now I cook with my laptop, which is a little dangerous, but I can't. I go to Pinterest, I find a recipe, I click on it, I get it, and I set it on the counter while I'm cooking. So the way we get our information, even as adults, has completely changed. And so I think I have to work in my own life. Am I spending too much time on Facebook? Is Pinterest taking my life away? So if I'm struggling, how much more are your kids struggling? So one of the ways I think to talk to our kids about how are they handling the social media, how are they handling the peer saturation, is to say, hey, I'm in this struggle with you. I have to check and balance my own self and my own use of the media and making sure, because we're not saying media is bad. It's just how much are you taking in? And then we really need to check the nutritional value of what it is we're taking in. And sadly for our kids, a lot of what they're taking in is a lot of junk.
You know, you mentioned too much time. I mean, is that probably as big an issue as anything? Is that
yes.
where it's there's never a break.
Right. And if the average teenager is spending 8 hours a day with some form of media, then that is having a profound influence on them. And, you know, we talk about things like, We used to tell students or parents, don't allow your kids to have a computer in your bedroom. You know, make sure the computer's in the family area where you're walking by and you can check what your kids are doing. Well, now you hand them a smartphone and their computer is on their phone and they have access to it all night. My sister, who has three teenage girls, well, one's in college now, but three girls, she said the rule in their house was that every phone had to be plugged in at night downstairs in the kitchen. The girls weren't allowed to take their phones up into the bedroom and have them there all night. And that way there was a bit of control of the turning off and not texting and not going to Facebook at 1 o'clock in the morning and those kind of things. So as parents, we really do need to be proactive in teaching our kids how to maybe have some control over all of these ways they're getting the information.
You mentioned texting. Let's jump into one of those variations of texting, that sexting. That's a word that wasn't in our vocabulary, 5 years ago
right.
or so, and now it's explain to me, I guess, why that even is going on.
Well, what we're seeing it as young as middle school, which is really devastating. We're seeing kids in the 6th, 7th, and 8th grade having very sexual conversations via text back and forth, and they think it's a game. And obviously, in some senses, these kids get this concept that it's safe somehow because they're not actually doing the types of things. And if I send a picture of myself or partly clothed or somewhat clothed or not clothed at all to a friend, it's just between me and them and no one will know, and having no concept that now they have put something out there. And at the end of the day, I mean, we're seeing with even a little thing happening on the Mankato State University down there in Mankato or Minnesota State there, that what you put on your phone isn't privately yours and that it will be scrutinized and you could even be arrested and lose your job. And so if adults can't get that, how do you think a 13-year-old's going to get that and understand that? And so that's why it's so important as parents that if you have given your child a device that has the ability to take pictures like a phone and transmit those pictures or text messages, then you better have long conversations about what is and is not appropriate, and you better be checking exactly what's going on with your child. And I think even of the bullying issue, sexting obviously is a big deal and sexual content, but what about even the bullying? We had a young girl just south of us near Owatonna, 7th grade girl, take her life. She hung herself in March, and a lot of the bullying was done via text, not just on Facebook, but it was specifically being done via text messages. And so, I mean, it's just such an unbelievable tragedy, and the adults on every level failed certainly this 13-year-old that took her life, and they failed the girls that were bullying as well by not stepping in and saying this is not acceptable behavior.
So when you talk about not stepping in, does that mean that we learn how to check records, or you mentioned long conversations. I mean, probably there's probably a lot of teens, right, adolescents would be rolling their eyes like, oh, wow, what I really want is a long conversation with
my
parents.
Yeah, well, you have to have them. And in rolling their eyes or not, every single study we've ever done on teens and parents say that teenagers want to hear from their parents. Now, I think the media, again, I'm being influenced by the media that tells me my teenager doesn't like me and doesn't want to hear from me. And although they may roll their eyes, and there are many times they don't like you, at the end of the day, they do love you, and you are the most important influencer on your child. And you cannot, you know, that teacher, that youth pastor, as wonderful as they are not going to be in my kid's life when they're 28. They just aren't. And so you're the one that is going to be the consistent and the constant. And one of the things I always tell parents on every level, whether it's talking to your kids about sexual purity, whether it's talking about good behavior, all of the texting, sexting, all of these things, you must create that atmosphere of constant conversation with your kids prior to puberty. If you aren't doing it before puberty, if you're not creating an environment in your family where everything is talked about ad nauseum before puberty, and that's why I can't give people an age. Well, how about seventh grade or sixth? It's not an age. It's a physiological change in your child. And for some of you, that may be at 10. So you'd better be paying close attention to your own child, monitoring their development. Because I tease parents in a way that prior to puberty, your child loves you. After, then we start getting the rolling of the eyes and you've become some weirdo. So if I really find that we know that if a parent establishes a pattern of good communication with their teen prior to puberty, that is typically carried through. If there hasn't been good communication up to that, it's hard to establish it at puberty.
Pam Stenzel is my guest. Pam's founder of Enlightened Communications, travels frequently to speaking to thousands of students, particularly about the issues of sexuality and the importance of abstinence. And she's talking to us today about some of the areas of social networking, social media. In fact, has got a couple copies of her book, Who's in Your Social Network? Also have some copies of the book, Nobody Told Me, which is a book that talks about what you need to know about the physical and emotional consequences of sex outside marriage. And we're going to be getting into some of those as well. And maybe if you have young children, young children around, you say, I don't really want to have them part of this conversation. You're just so forewarned. But we'd love to have you join with us. Maybe tell us a bit about your story, or perhaps you've heard Pam speak, or it's generated some conversation starters with your kids. We'd love to just hear about it. You have the opportunity to join the conversation at 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484. Or you can always go online. It's faithradionet.com and click on the Connecting Faith show page. Or through Facebook. If we're talking social media, use Facebook. It's Connecting Faith and Neil Stavem. We'd love to have you join the conversation. More in a minute with Pam Stenzel. It's 18 after the hour. You're listening to Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Stavem, and my guest today is Pam Stenzel. Pam's founder of Enlightened Communications, and she has given us some great insight over the years, has been speaking for a number of years. Sex has a price tag. It was one of her first videos, was it?
It was, 1993, yeah.
Wow, and it's since been updated. It's called The High Cost of Free Love. But was on the front lines in this whole area as a director of the Alpha Women's Center, a counseling center for women undergoing crisis pregnancies. That was part of her background, has done a number of videos and some books. And we're talking today a little bit about social media. Who's in Your Social Network is one of the books that Pam has co-written. And talking about some of the challenges with that we mentioned sexting, but, I mean, there are other, and too much time, but there's some other issues with social media, and let's maybe talk about those. What are some of the concerns?
Yeah, you know, in Who's in Your Social Network, I actually took a chapter, and we wrote this for teens, by the way, and it looks like your Facebook page, so it's an ongoing conversation for students, but every chapter kind of tackles a different networking or a social movies, television, music, and also gaming. And so I had to do a lot of research for this particular book because I'm kind of out of the loop on many of those things, including movies and television, by the way, since I tend to watch one station. So I went to my own son who has struggled for years with this gaming, and I went to other professionals and such, but it has been really astounding to me the level of problems that we're having, especially with our boys, with what seems to be an addiction to this world of gaming. And there were a few things I didn't know growing up, knowing a lot, you know, working with teens all these years with my own son. I was unaware of, first of all, I was unaware of the addictive quality of the game itself. And I was unaware in some of these games that there are some pretty serious pornography type things being embedded in the game. And because I don't play them and have no interest in starting nor doing it, I didn't realize that my son could get to certain levels where he could unlock some things that were extremely pornographic and very sexual in nature. And you know, here we are worrying about the computer, worrying about the music and the movies they're watching. And here in a game that might have seemed innocent on its face, there's so much of this pornography put in. But one of the things we're learning about brain development in such a fascinating way right now, a good friend of mine, Dr. Joe McElhaney, has written a book called Hooked, and also with Dr. Frieda Busch, where, you know, years ago we couldn't study a healthy working brain. It would either we'd neither need to cut your skull open, which would be unethical, or we would have to use way too much radiation. Well, with the technology of MRI, we can now, without hurting someone, study and watch a brain and how it works and how it functions. And God's design is absolutely phenomenal. But the few, I think the major ones that I think are really important, one is that a young person, we thought kind of by 7 years old, your brain was kind of developed and then we're just adding knowledge. Well, that's not the case. The frontal lobe of your brain does not fully develop till you're about 25. And that frontal lobe is what controls your decision making. It helps your impulsivity. It's like, I can now think about what's best for me a year down the road, not just Friday night. And so it kind of explains a little of our teen problem with exactly why are you skateboarding with a rope behind that car going 40 miles an hour down the road. Someone thought that was a good idea, not sure. So, or the impulsivity that our kids have. And Avis, I think, in National and the car rental places are the only ones who got this right before the science. They won't let you rent a car till you're 25. So they kind of understood the brain development. So we've got that kind of going against us with our kids. And then we've got things like we've figured out dopamine. And I think this dopamine is one of those neurotransmitters in your brain that's kind of flushed into your brain that causes you to become addicted. And so that's how the drugs kind of work on you, the heroin, those kind of things we know about. But gaming also causes dopamine release in the brain. So does sex, by the way. And so the reality is when a behavior causes this dopamine to be affected in your brain, you want more of it and you need more of it and you need more and more and more intensity in order to get that same feeling. So when we talk about a gaming addiction, it is a very real brain function, just the way being addicted to marijuana or heroin or nicotine or any of these other things might be. So those are things as parents we need to understand. This has addictive qualities to it. And if your child begins using these type of things at 8, 9, 10 years old, they're going to be needing more and more and more time in order to get to that same high that they got when they were playing Mario Brother carts when they were 8. And so, again, what we want to do is we want to say control, control, control. Understand that this can take over your life. And if you aren't putting places, you know, things in place where you control the amount of time and actually what you're doing gaming wise, then you could find yourself in a little bit of trouble.
Seems like with the addictions of any kind that, you know, dabbling a little bit really isn't all that helpful, right? So, well, if porn was an addiction, say, well, I'll just look at a little bit. Well, that's not really going to solve it, is it? So
right,
is it the same with gaming or anything else?
Sure. But I think here's the deal. Porn is addicting because you are the dopamine gives you that good feeling, which sex is supposed to do. I mean, sexuality needs to do that. If not, if sex felt like hacking your hand off with a machete, you wouldn't do it, and I wouldn't be here, and neither would you. So there is this need and desire to have things make you feel good, and you know, for some of us, what we do gives us that dopamine. Speaking gives me a rush of dopamine, and so it helps you to reinforce that behavior. So also, without getting into huge details, you should read the book Hooked. I'm going to tell parents to read it. But women have a very important chemical, a neurotransmitter in your brain called oxytocin, which we call the bonding neurotransmitter. And men have one called vasopressin. For men, vasopressin is released along with the dopamine at orgasm. So what vasopressin and oxytocin do is it bonds us to that person. So here's our problem with pornography. If you get a young boy gets involved in pornography, he's having a dopamine release and he's bonding to an image, right? Mm-hmm. He's not to his wife, to an image. And that image continually changes. He loses his ability to bond to one person. So when you think of the way God designed it, it's absolutely miraculous. God designed for that dopamine effect and that bonding to be released only with your spouse. And think about the incredible amount of bonding and addiction. I mean, I want my husband to be addicted to me. Does that make, I mean, that's kind of what we're after. We're after that immense bonding and addiction. If we abuse those before we enter into marriage, if we abuse those things as young people, as teenagers, then what that does is it hinders our ability to bond to our spouse in marriage, and it triggers addiction to things like pornography or extramarital sex, which then leads to infidelity. So one of the things we want to talk to teenagers about is one of your most important sex organs has nothing to do with what's below your belt. It's your mind. It's your brain. And you need to protect your brain. And that's why pornography and those types of things, and even things that seem harmless. Can I speak to the married women out there, like 50 Shades of Grey? This is not harmless, and this affects your brain, and it affects your ability to bond.
Yeah. We want to talk a little bit about the impulsive nature of kids, and so to sort of think long-term, how does that work? And I know Pam has spent lots of time talking about that, giving real statistics, and talking about the high cost of free love. But let's take a call a minute. Trish is calling in from Egan. Trish, go ahead. You're on with Pam Stanzel.
I just wanted to say thank you. My daughter is now 18, and she's a student at ISU. And so way back when, sixth grade, when I really started looking at resources to help me coming up, I did not grow up in the faith. And so it was around when she was about third grade is when we got saved. And so in sixth grade, I started realizing that was actually the age when kids were really starting to just experiment with hooking up. And so your book was one of the first ones that I found as a resource that the Lord led me to. And what I did was I left copies of it in my back seat. And my daughter was a cheerleader, so I always had lots of girls in my car at all times. And I could never keep a copy in there because somebody would ultimately take it. And I know for myself that I also gave those to her two best friends when they were probably in ninth grade. And by that point, I didn't really know if it would be helpful to them. But I actually know now, my daughter has informed me that they actually were both virgins until they were seniors in high school. And I know, a lot of people would feel really bad about that. But actually, I'm really thankful for that because I know that for them was a big sacrifice. And I know that part of that was because I got to be in their life and always telling them, there's just constantly feeding into them. And of course, I couldn't be with them all the time. But I know for my daughter, your book and listening to you, I've heard you speak, and I want to thank you so much because it was so helpful
in my
struggle and my battle and getting her to the place. Also, though, teaching her that sex isn't bad. This is something we want to wait for, and that was really instrumental. I didn't want to just focus on all the negative because it really isn't a bad thing. I really wanted her to actually dream about a future where it would be this beautiful thing, and your books were so instrumental. So thank you so much for all of your work and everything you've done. Thank you.
God bless thanks, you. Trish. Thanks for sharing that. And prayers for your daughter as she heads off to college. That's always a scary time.
Yeah, that is. Well, thank you, Trish. Glad to have you listening in. It's a reminder, too, that this isn't a bad thing. I mean, that your message, while it says, hey, there, there's a price tag, that there's a cost, but that there's benefits, too.
Right,
in the right situation.
And that's part of understanding God's design. God's design for marriage being a man and a woman, and that sexuality is such a beautiful picture of intimacy. When Jesus describes his relationship with his church as being us being his bride and we his groom, he's speaking directly to this amazing intimate relationship that was meant to be exclusive. And when I talk to students even just about the way we're created, women will pay the brunt of the price physically when it comes to sex outside of marriage. Out of the 30 major sexually transmitted diseases we're dealing with today, 26 of them primarily damage women, and they damage specifically, most of them, their fertility. And so when you think about sexuality, sex is the complete opening up of a woman to be, to receive the man. And the person who is doing the receiving is typically at greatest risk. And so, so the church being able to open itself up to Christ requires trust that he will not hurt or damage.
We want to pick up that conversation in just a couple minutes. We'll take a short break and give you the opportunity to join us as well. You have a question, a comment, want to join the discussion, you can call us at 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH, or on Facebook, it's Connecting Faith and Neil Stavem. More with Pam Stenzel in just a couple minutes, talking about social network and more.
And when you do two or three a day.
Hey, we're talking to Pam Stenzel today, and we are talking about the message of the high cost of free love and getting some perspective on the joys of understanding God's gift of sexuality. We're also talking a little bit about social networking, or the Who's in Your Social Networks title of one of Pam's books. And also Nobody Told Me, which is what you need to know about the physical and emotional consequences of sex outside marriage. You've got some copies of those books. You want to join the conversation, you're welcome to contribute to the show. We'd love to have pass one of those books along to you as a great resource. Also, you can go to her website for wonderful resources, pamstenzel.com, pamstenzel.com. And Pam, we're just talking during the break a little bit about, you know, how many students you've talked to over the years. I mean, it's hundreds of thousands.
Yeah, I average about 300,000 a year, and give or take. So, yeah, it's getting up there in the world of a lot.
You know, and maybe, I guess, before we go on, because I want to talk a little bit about, you know, dealing with those impulsive teens and adolescents, but are you able to say what you want to say, communicate a message in a public school setting?
Yeah, you know, there's two countries in the world that you can't say God on a public school campus, and that would be the United States and Canada. So we have had to... you know, I start differently and I end differently. Here's what I do believe. God's truth is true whether you put his name on it or not. So we can still speak truth. We just can't say God said in the midst of that truth. And I think, you know, I can't start with God created sex for marriage. I can say if you have sex outside of one permanent monogamous, and monogamy doesn't mean one at a time. That's one partner who's only been with you. There will be a cost. And that's just a medical, biological, and now emotional and psychological fact. What, you know, minus any kind of moral thoughts. I think the hardest thing for me to leave out when I'm in the public school is in a faith setting when we talk about, when I get to the end of my talk and I try to talk to those kids who've maybe made choices to have sex and let them know that they don't have to continue to make that same choice. Just because you had sex back here doesn't mean you have to continue that behavior. I mean, in a public school, I can say it that way. But in a faith setting, we can talk about forgiveness and we can talk about the fact that Christ died for their sins. And by coming to the cross and accepting his forgiveness, my Bible says that your sin is thrown as far as the east is from the west, that you are completely forgiven. And that is a, that's something that's very difficult to leave out because, you know, people say, well, just tell them to forgive themselves. Forgiving yourselves means nothing. Knowing that you have been forgiven by the creator of the universe who loves you beyond measure is a complete different issue. So that for me is the hardest thing at the end of the day to leave out. And I really do believe that it is our faith that helps us to make those right choices. It gives us the power. I've asked hundreds and hundreds of young people in their 20s who have remained pure and made it to their marriages pure. I asked them, how did you do it? How did you survive through high school and college and all the pressure? And almost every one of them said to me, my faith was real. It was my faith that kept me strong. And so minus your faith, I'm not sure how you just dig in and do the right thing, minus Jesus. I don't know. But so those are the kind of hard things you have to leave out in the public system. But I do believe our public school students still need to be given the truth, and they're not. And so I just believe in a big way that God's called me to that place and to be a voice of truth in that setting. So I continue to do quite a few public schools.
Want to maybe just give you an opportunity to talk a little bit about statistics or some in terms of sexual activity. I know you're working on, you have a new project called Girls Gone Right. I mean, because it seems like, you know, again, we talked right at the outset of the program that we're saturated by this in society.
Right. Well, you know, here's the reality. In the CDC said 2 years ago, I'm going to say 2010, a big study was released, and we now have more virgins in high school than we have had in 15 years. So this pendulum has begun to swing back. In fact, 57% of graduating seniors were virgins by their own admission. So, and obviously these are self-reporting studies, and I always try and look at how they asked them the questions and did they ask them properly, and there's some room for error here and there. But the reality is the trend right now is for students to wait, and the problem is the media makes you think that everybody's doing it, that all kids are having sex, and that choosing to abstain from sex or to be pure is not even possible. And in fact, most of the comprehensive sex education, or what we call sexual risk reduction programs being used in our public schools today, are basically saying it is not possible for you to wait. That's not even a possibility. So since we know eventually you're going to make a decision to be sexually active, here are all the ways to protect yourself from disease and unplanned pregnancy. The difference with what we teach in the schools is called sexual risk avoidance. And we tell kids it is possible for you to avoid, 100% avoid all of these things by choosing to remain sexually abstinent until you're in a permanent relationship.
You talk about abstinence. A listener wants to know, so what's the difference between abstinence and celibacy? Or is that the word that you use?
Well, I don't use the word abstinence a lot because it's gotten a kind of a bad rap on a lot of levels, and it's become a political word. That's why we've switched to sexual risk avoidance. But I love the word celibacy. The word celibacy is actually maybe more of a throwback to the term that we should be talking about is chastity. And the reason that our culture rejected it is because it has such a moral connotation to it. But it is exactly what we're talking about. We're not saying sex is bad, never have it. We're saying sex belongs in a boundary situation. It's like fire. It needs to be contained. And that containment is marriage, a permanent relationship. Well, obviously, there are those who choose never to marry. And celibacy is a state where I say I am choosing not to act on my sexual desires in order to keep myself pure. And it's a beautiful thing. It's not an easy decision to choose celibacy for a lifetime. But the reality is this, that whatever you choose, marriage or singleness, it should be saying, I am being called to this. God has called me to marriage. And in marriage, I have to be chaste. I have to. And that means not reading 50 Shades of Grey as a married woman. I need to be chaste. So I am, in effect, practicing chastity as a married woman by how I choose to use my sexuality. So I think that's the broader context of purity. When you read your New Testament and you see the word, 1 Corinthians says, flee sexual immorality. Ephesians said, don't have any part of sexual immorality. That word is typically the Greek word porneia, and it is a very all-encompassing term. And I would challenge you, do a little Bible study on the word porneia in the New Testament, and you're going to see it. It means not only reserving the sexual act itself for marriage and only the two people that are married, but also even watching or looking at or watching others, which is where we get the word, obviously, pornography. And so it's a broadened term. When Jesus said, you've heard it say, don't commit adultery, but I say, if you look at a woman and lust after, you've committed adultery in your heart. Jesus is expanding our understanding of what purity and chastity really is.
You know, we start out talking a little bit about social media and, you know, how kids don't necessarily have the right kind of discernment to understand the power of this tool. But I would assume that, you know, this is probably a place where you can sort of you know, not be honest about your behavior or your wishes. I mean, that's where sexting comes in, some of those things. But that people can say, well, I'll sort of make up a persona here and I'll tell stories or whatever.
Right, and that's really the problem with media, is you can become someone else behind a computer screen, behind your cell phone, on your Facebook page, and you can kind of act. I mean, I know. Some of the my own son and some of the others that have gotten involved heavily in gaming, part of that was they weren't having real success in real social relationships. And so this was a way that they could kind of immerse themselves in a place and be someone else and find success being that other person. And then the problem is that can, you know, envelop you in that. And so we're lying. We're putting on. I mean, we've talked about this since the beginning of time. Are you putting on a mask? Are you being something else to someone else and not being authentic? Well, all of this technology does is gives you more and more opportunity to be less and less authentic. And so again, and I want parents to understand too, my book, Who's in Your Social Network, I'm not blaming the technology, because it's not the technology's problem. It's a heart and character problem. And that's really why with this new introduction of what I'm doing called Girls Gone Right, a night, an event for mothers and their daughters to come together, we're really focusing on character and, you know, right foundations, right relationships, and right character. And the reality is, I talk to kids a lot about when it comes to relationships and marriage, opposites might attract when it comes to personality. Opposites never attract when it comes to character. You're going to get what you are. So I have these girls saying to me, well, why do I always get such losers? Maybe you should take a look in the mirror, because you are attracting what you are. So if that's the case, then my teen years would be far better spent developing my character than worrying about whether I look good. And it's kind of that bait thing, you know. I mean, if you are going to go fish walleye, then there's a certain kind of bait you use and there's a way you do it. And you shouldn't be surprised when you get walleye. And the girls who are getting a lot of losers are baiting losers. And maybe they need to kind of check what bait they're using. And the reality is this, it's far more important to be the right person than to find the right person. And really, the teen years are the years that you get that one shot at doing it. You don't get to go back and fix it at 40. And so that's why it's so desperately important that we as parents and those that love students spend a lot of time saying to them, care more about your honesty, care more about your compassion, care more about your fidelity, care more about your work ethic. You know, girls, do you really want to marry a guy who spends 6 hours a day playing Call of Duty? Because that might be reflected in his paycheck at the end of the day. So these are things that you should think about, and you should be saying, you know, I need to work on my character so that I can attract someone who has that same character.
Just thinking, you mentioned the event Girls Gone Right. And by the way, you can find out more about that and all the other resources on Pam's website at pamstenzel.com. We alluded to it earlier, that women pay the price, a heavier price, and yet it seems like the girls are so much under so much pressure. I mean, that it's apparently society expects that it's the wild girl, right? That's given all the publicity or whatever. So, I mean, they're paying a price, and they're being forced, maybe pushed towards
over-sexualized,
this behavior.
Over-sexualized. But you know what? I posted on a blog, and you should be able to see that on my site. If not, email me. I'll send you the link. But just recently, a study was done where they were looking at the sexualization of girls as young as 6 years old with all this toddlers and tiaras and the Bratz dolls and all of these things. And they said the two things that caused a girl, even if she was exposed to that type of sexualized material, that kept her from over-sexualizing herself was her mother and religion. It is an absolutely fascinating study. And what that says to our moms out there is, first of all, if a mother was over caring about her looks and constantly trying to be sexual herself, usually her daughter was. That matters. And then also faith matters in the way you communicate your faith. And if we could get our moms to get, and that was really kind of some of the catalyst for me to have a day where we didn't just take teen girls, but we included their mothers, and we made sure that this was a relationship that was being fostered and encouraged.
Let's take a call. Anonymous caller has a state fair story. Go ahead. You're on with Pam Stenzel.
Thanks, Pam, for your boldness on your subject. I appreciate you and your book. And we were at the state fair a couple nights ago, and I was just absolutely appalled. I was in where all the vendors were, and there was a booth that was just bold as could be, and they had huge signs, condom pusher. And I'm like, I just, my heart just almost like stopped. I told my husband, I said, you know what, I cannot bypass this place. I have to see what their reasoning is. And she's like, well, we just have to protect these teens today because they're going to go ahead and do all this anyway. And yeah. I'm like, I said, well, you know what? I was always told by I won't mention the man's name because he's a household name. He wrote Christian books. But I said, he said condoms, you know, they don't protect your heart.
True.
And I said, furthermore, I said, then not only that, these girls bring all this baggage into their marriage, and then they wonder why their marriage doesn't work. Well, she said, they're going to do it anyway. I said, no, they go according to the the family's values. They've even proven now that their friends and things are not their role models. Their parents are. And I said, whatever the parent values, they will value.
Good for you.
Yeah, good.
Good for you.
Thanks.
And you know, they may not believe it at the end of the day, but they have to think about it. And by the way, condoms don't protect your heart, but condoms don't protect your body. 50%, it may be 50% for chlamydia, which is the most common, one of the most common STDs in the world. You know, we've got all these condoms. I just read today, literally today, the San Francisco said their STD rates have skyrocketed. They have a huge increase in chlamydia and herpes infections. You're telling me that the people in San Francisco don't know what a condom is? I have news for you. They know what a condom is. And so the condoms have done nothing, nothing to stem the tide of disease. And so when are we going to wake up and say, we were wrong, doesn't work? And I'll have to go find them at the fair today later. But here is the situation. And I could have sex a million times with my husband who's only been with me, never use a condom, never get an STD. I could have sex once with some guy I meet at a hotel, use a condom, be infected for the rest of my life. It has the safety of sex has nothing at all to do with condoms. It has everything to do with a partner.
In a moment, we want to come back, talk a little bit more with Pam Stenzel, talk about how to encourage and help our impulsive adolescents as they try and navigate the challenging culture in which we live. Who's in Your Social Network is one of the books that we're referencing from Pam Stenzel. Also, Nobody Told Me, What You Need to Know About the Physical and Emotional Consequences of Sex Outside Marriage. Pam Stenzel from Enlightened Communications has the video High Cost of Free Love. And we'd love to have you join the conversation, too, if you have a question or comments. 877-933-2484. We'll continue in a minute. Going to join the conversation today with Pam Stenzel. Glad to have you listening in to Connecting Faith. Pam has spoken to millions of students and adolescents around the globe, actually, and through her videos and books, many more have been helped and encouraged. The High Cost of Free Love, the updated version of Sex as a Price Tag, and a couple of the books we're referencing today, Who's in Your Social Network, and Nobody Told Me. And Pam, we touched a little bit earlier about the brain development, what we've come to discover, and about dopamine and some of those things. How do we help our adolescents have a long-term consequence thinking when they're almost by nature impulsive?
Right, and that's where the parent, and I'm so glad the caller reiterated that parents do matter, and I have also a DVD called Parents Matter, and as parents, how can we be instilling these things in our kids? One of the things that's so important for parents is that you be working with your kids when they're young about character qualities that they need to have so they can navigate these years. I talk about things like delayed gratification, and that's something you can attempt to work hard at teaching your four-year-old. You know what? No, you're not going to be able to eat all of this candy right now because it's dinner. After dinner, we will, after you've eaten the broccoli, we will maybe allow you to have one thing. You know what I mean? And what that does, teaching your kids about money will do the same thing. It training them that you don't just spend what you don't have, and that you maybe have to work if you really want that thing, then maybe you need to work, save, and do these things so that later then you can enjoy that thing and it's paid for, right? So these are character qualities that you can be teaching your kids on issues that don't have anything to do with sex, but that will then translate into the way that they make decisions about their sexuality. Some people will know there was a very famous study done on children at 4 years old called the marshmallow test, done by Stanford University, where they put marshmallows in front of four-year-olds and then walked out of the room, told them not to eat them until they came back, and then they watched them on a mirror. And the students who could not keep themselves from eating that marshmallow in 15 minutes were the same students as teenagers who were having impulsivity problems. So maybe if you have a four-year-old at home, you want to do a little marshmallow test on them and find out if your kid is a little, you know. But what we did want to say is, are there things that we can do for that child who's very impulsive to teach him the skills he needs in order to avoid that need for immediate gratification? And there are things that you can do. Kids were, for some of the four-year-olds were creative. They put their head on their desk and fell asleep. They didn't look at it. They found other ways to distract themselves. But But those things can also be done with parents. One of the reasons I say to parents, no dating till you're 16. None. There should be no child before 16 that's dating at all, ever. Because they just do not have the maturity to handle the relationship nor the pressure. So we can relieve it all together by not allowing that to happen as parents. And then, you know, as we begin to allow them to enter into some of those relationships, we do it very carefully with a ton of supervision. And every parent's going to have their thoughts about, I mean, some parents won't even allow dating at all until they're 30. That's up to you. But these are the kind of things that we oversee, and we participate with them in the process. One of the things I had for my kids, one of them was, you have to plan your date. If your date includes the Burger King in a movie, if that movie's done at 10:20, your curfew is 10:40, right? Not we're going to go sit in a car for an hour and stare into each other's eyes. That is a period of time that's going to get you into trouble. If you're at a youth event and it ends at this time, then your curfew is as long as it takes you to get from there home, period. So those are the things that we teach our kids, to plan those times together and not allow themselves to get into situations that are going to be too difficult for them to control.
And even as we circle back to social media things, obviously maybe planning and, using some restraint there as well.
Right. And oversight. Again, oversight. Now, eventually you're going to have to let your child go and show up on campus and make these decisions for themselves. But this is a process. We don't let them go at 14 because they're going to eventually be gone at 18. We do this in a slow, with a lot of supervision, and so that hopefully by the time they're 18, 19, 20, that they're able to maybe come to a campus and make some of those choices for themselves. But I'll tell you what, even that's a process where you're rechecking in. And I had some requirements when my daughter went away to college. I said, I want you to find the faith community on campus and get involved, and I want you to go to church. And those were some important things that helped them then make that adjustment from parents being there every day, into kind of living life on their own a little bit.
I assume that there's, you can, without realizing it probably, or without trying, really be a model for others too. Because I think whether it's how you deal with social media or how you deal with sexual pressure, that kids are looking for some clear understanding
and encouragement. Because your friendships do matter. I always tell kids, find those friends who share your values. Because when it gets tough, then you're not out there all by yourself. You know, you're not the last virgin on the planet, by the way. So find those other kids who are making those good decisions. You be an encouragement to them because they need you, and they can in turn be an encouragement to you. And that's part of, you know, using social media to do positive things. I mean, I have a niece who's at a Christian college in Michigan, and it was so cute. She made a decision to be baptized, and I actually flew to see it, you know. And her girlfriend sang her the greatest song, and they put it on their Facebook page to Kelly Clarkson's song Stronger or whatever, and I can't sing it badly, but you're being baptized, and they sang this entire song to her, and I almost got tears down my face as they encouraged her in taking this step in her spiritual journey. And these were her roommates at college, and so they used crazy Facebook to do that. So there are ways that we can use these social media type things, Facebook, YouTube, to share faith and to encourage each other in our faith and our spiritual journey, and those are phenomenal. And I've seen kids do it miraculously. A young man last December shared his faith right before he passed away, shared his faith in Christ, and it got over millions of YouTube hits. And I tease people. I said, that 17-year-old boy last December shared Jesus with more people than Billy Graham on YouTube. So let's use it to do good things.
Yeah, and to allow the creativity of our adolescents to really, we couldn't figure it out probably, but
right.
they'll come up with some great
ways
to use it.
And they're good at it. Yeah. They are good at it. These are talented, gifted young people who can make a real impact on their generation. And so I'm excited to watch them do those really amazing things. And we're finding new and exciting ways to get the gospel not only to their peers, but around the world.
So are you encouraged? I mean, you mentioned earlier that statistically, I mean, increase in virginity. I mean,
yep.
That's, so does that give you a hope?
I have so much hope. Here's the deal. The fire, the persecution, the difficulty is going to bring some amazing Daniels, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednegoes out of this generation because they've had to be different. They've had to take a stand. And it's in the fire where real character is developed and can shine. So I really believe we're going to see some amazing young people come out of this generation who are going to really change their world. And they're going to do it because they've had to be world changers from the beginning.
Pam Stenzel is our guest today, and if you want to find out more, you get to, where in the world is Pam Stenzel? Is
that that's right.
Okay.
All right. Find Pam. Where is she?
Find Pam, yes. So PamStenzel.com. It's STENZEL.com. And the books we've been referencing today, Who's in Your Social Network and Nobody Told Me, co-authored with Melissa Nesdahl. And so both are great resources. They're little books.
Small books. So yeah. Teens will actually read that. So you can throw them in the backseat of your car, and they might pick it up and read a chapter quickly.
That was a great idea, wasn't it?
It was awesome. I loved it. That was awesome.
Maybe we got about 30 seconds left. Any final thoughts? I mean, maybe the number one recommendation to moms or dads listening today?
Well, you know, videos and books are great and awesome and amazing, but me live is so much more exciting, and a prophet is always without honor in their own town. So if you're listening from the Dakotas or from Minnesota or Wisconsin, I'm close. And so, you know, I'd rather go there than California and Texas and Canada. So.
Yeah, because you can come back home.
Because I can come home quickly.
That's right. That's right. Well, we're glad you came here.
Oh, it's good to be here.
And I'm saying you are going to spend a little time at the fair. Right?
Yes, so. I'm heading over to the hot fair.
Yeah, well, we're glad that you we kept it cool here.
That's right. I'm frozen, so I'm ready.
Pam Stenzel is my guest. You can find out more on her website, PamStenzel.com, and check out some of the resources that are available there. And thank you for listening to Connecting Faith. Coming up this afternoon on Live the Promise, you want to be listening today, as Susie welcomes Jerry Trousdale. That was yesterday. So it's Sharon James today. That's right, Sharon James today. And that's coming up at 3 o'clock. Check it out here at Faith Radio, 3 o'clock today. Susie Larson and Sharon James on today's broadcast. You're listening to Connecting Faith on Faith Radio.